Another economic downturn be upon us? Well, according to our next guest, yes, it may be. Tad Revell is Chief Investment Officer of Fixed Income at TCW Group. They've got nearly $90 billion in assets under management. He joins us from Los Angeles. So, Tad, you're going to be a bit of a downer today, aren't you?
Well, I guess bond people have that inherent risk. I think we always look at the downside.
Talk to us, though, about why you say we could see another economic downturn. In fact, you actually say it's upon us already.
Oh, well, I don't know that we're necessarily saying that the sky is already falling. I think what we're saying, however, is that we're seeing signs of excess, particularly in the credit markets and the capital markets, and that the nature of policymaking, particularly out of the Federal Reserve, is almost designed to both accelerate and accentuate the overall business cycle. And I could elaborate on that if that's helpful.
Sure. I'd like to understand that difference between that credit cycle and the business cycle, or the not-so-big difference.
Okay. Yes, in our estimation, no difference at all, that the credit cycle and the business cycle have become one and the same. Back in the day, when I was coming of age, it was very fashionable to speak about the business cycle as this almost manufacturing phenomenon that those that built widgets made too many of the widgets, and then they would have to lay off their assembly line workers, and that's what would cause a recession. That's what drove the business cycle. Any even halfway astute observer of the last 30 years will tell you we've never seen a business cycle like that, at least not in decades. Or the other notion is that it's all about an excess of demand, and inflation goes up, and the Fed takes the punch bowl away and raises interest rates. But that's not what caused the downturn in 2008 or 2002 or 1998. If you look more closely, what apparently has been driving the business cycle is really excesses in the credit markets. It's really, in our estimation, just this simple. When the credit markets are willing to extend the frontiers of credit and willing to allow ever more marginal borrowers the access to the credit in whatever area, in the last cycle it was with respect to home mortgages, you see an economic expansion. But at some point, the extent to which the credit's been created exceeds the obvious capacity of people to repay it, and you reach the dark side of the cycle, the deleveraging, and that's when the cycle ends. And I think what we're saying is you're seeing a lot of those excesses that we never thought would come back so quickly after the last cycle already present.
Ted, be more specific about the excesses that you're seeing in terms of credit.
Well, let's see. One of them simply pertains to the overall price of credit. So the leveraged finance market, the so-called high yield, or what was called at one time the junk bond market, the average yield in that marketplace is only about 5%. It's never been this low before. And that is suggestive to us that investors are not charging sufficiently high premium in order to take the risk of lending to a variety of businesses, many of which historically are not able to sustain their capacity to pay over the course of a cycle. In other words, the price of the bonds is too expensive vis-a-vis the risk of default. I think another place you can look is in other areas of the asset market. While we're not experts on it per se, or at least I'm not an expert on it per se, I think it's fair to say that the valuations in some parts, at least of the equity market, the IPO market, seem a little stretched. And I think it's probably also the case that in many of the larger metropolitan areas, that the home price equation is beyond the capacity of many median-type income-earning households to have the capacity to afford purchase.
That's a lot to absorb. So how does this end, or does it just keep going?
Well, it continues, so to speak, as long as there is an environment in which people are willing, so to speak, to enable it, as long as people are willing to accept ever more marginal borrowers, which is to say, willing to accept increasing levels of risk, really, the ultimate capacity to lose money down the road, it will continue. But what we would suggest is that the the disconnect that the Fed has created. They've created this artificially low cost of funding, which, as everyone knows, is evidenced by 0% interest rates at the bank, is completely disconnected from the actual risk of loss when you go and lend somebody money. When you lend somebody money, no one, I think, in his right mind will tell you that there's 0% chance of him defaulting. There needs to be a premium above that. That premium is too narrow.
Tad, based on your outlook and keeping a focus on the credit markets, how does this ultimately start to play out in terms of what we see in the economy and then the implications for investments and investors?
Well, I think that one place that investors are supposed to be on the watch for are the eruptions of volatility that I think oftentimes come later on in these economic cycles. So everybody remembers having a favorite stock maybe in 1999, right before the tech bubble crash of 2000, of course, when a company would miss its earnings by a penny and the stock would get thrashed. It would go down 10 or 15% in a day. That was a signal from the market that there was an awareness that the growth models in those businesses had been exhausted when management couldn't find that last penny. And those upticks in volatility we've seen at other periods as well. Leading up to the 2008 ultimate debacle with Lehman, you had the failure of Bear Stearns. There were problems with hedge funds before that. And for those who watched the mortgage market very carefully, there were so-called early payment defaults as early in that process as late 2006. So what we would suggest for investors is pay heed to the taper tantrum of last May, June 2013, and recognize that when you start to see more of these, or at least a seemingly almost inexplicable manifestation of volatility, that it's a warning from the markets that valuations are stretched and that it's perhaps important to evaluate how you're allocating your capital and to think about how to be more focused on preservation at this point in the cycle.
How about buying U.S. Treasury bonds?
Well, obviously the yields are low, and they have been held artificially low by virtue of the fact that the Fed has been buying literally trillions of them for its own account. And so we don't believe that Treasury yields represent a fair or proper market pricing. A 2.6% 10-year Treasury yield simply does not represent, in our estimation, a proper long-term real rate of return. And so while it has quote-unquote positive carry relative to 0% cash, we suspect that it's not long-term a good investment.
So what do you do in the meantime?
Well, you look for places in the capital markets that are oftentimes not the focus or the immediate focus of investors. So, for instance, there are still legacy securities from the last cycle, so-called non-agency mortgages. This is the legacy subprime and alt-A securitizations that still represent pretty decent yields, something like 5.5%. On a loss-adjusted basis, and given that many of the underlying loans have survived some fairly brutal conditions, 2008, 2009, and so forth, those are, in our estimation, fairly well protected securities that have the capacity to ultimately pay you back without really having to worry a whole lot about your counterparties. So I think that that's one area that can be looked at. But as a general rule, if you haven't done well with your investments in the sense of realizing very high rates of return over the last few years, this isn't the time to be stretching and reaching for the yield.
How much of your thinking is based on what you think the Fed will continue to do based on kind of what we've seen recently from them, kind of, you know, unwinding the asset purchases in terms of backing off at a pretty regular rate? And it looks like in terms of rates, you know, many think that they're going to be put at least for the next year or so.
Yeah, I think that the Fed is almost singularly focused, they've more or less said this, on trying to improve the conditions of the economy and the capital markets in the current period. And the Fed is mighty, but it's not almighty. And monetary policy can be effective, but it doesn't have some magical ability to lift growth in the economy to sustained higher levels, or to banish the bane of unemployment. And what this all comes down to is the Fed's ability to lower unemployment in the near term, which is their focus, is certainly there. But it's being done at the expense of long-term financial stability. You're manufacturing a lot of bad paper in the capital market, in effect, and this is being done by issuing a lot of debt and creating a lot of loans that may not have the capacity to be repaid over the long term. And so, of course, this is the nature of a business and a capital market cycle. So you're making things somewhat better now, but it's really coming at the expense of what we believe will be worse conditions for the economy and the capital markets down the road.
How about outside the United States? Give you 20 seconds, Tad.
Well, there's a lot happening outside the U.S., but most of it is not terribly encouraging. You're seeing, obviously, inflation and currency problems in India, Indonesia, South Africa, Turkey, Brazil. So the so-called fragile five economies are under stress under conditions of low rates in the U.S. So it's hard to be terribly optimistic about where those economies are going in the near term.
I want to thank you very much for joining us. Tad Revelle is the Chief Investment Officer of Fixed Income TCW Group, joining us from Los Angeles, where he helps manage nearly $88 billion. This is Taking Stock on Bloomberg.